ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमामिष्टपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय गुरुदे श्रीमति भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनि नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वरदेवे गौरवाणी कृष्णे निर्विशेष शून्यवारि पाश्चात्तरेश तदने श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री श्रीमद्भागवत कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 50 वर्स 23 भगवन् निसंगा अत्ता संददा शरान विकृष्य मुंचन सिता बाना पूगां निग्नन रतान कुंजर वाजी पत्तीं निरंतरं यद्वत अलाता चक्रम ग्रनन निसंगारत संददत चरान विकृष्य मुंशांसित बाणपूगान निग्नान रतान कुंजर वाजिपत्तिन निरंतरम यद्व अलात चक्रम ग्रनन निसंगार अत संददत चरान विकृष्य मुंशांसित बाणपूगान निग्नान रतान कुंजर वाजिपत्तिन निरंतरम यद्व अलात चक्रम निसंगात from his quiver atta then sandadat fixing charan arrows vikrisha pulling back munchan releasing sita sharp bana arrows pugan floods nignam striking ratan chariots kunja elephants vaji horses patin infantrymen nirantaram relentlessly yadvat just like alakta chakram a burning torch whirled around to make a circle of fire. Translation, Lord Krishna took arrows from his quiver, fixed them on the bowstring, pulled back, and released endless torrents of sharp shafts which struck the enemy's chariots, elephants, horses, and infantrymen. And the Lord, shooting his arrows, resembled a blazing circle of fire. Text 24. Elephants fell to the ground, their foreheads split open. Cavalry horses fell with severed necks. Chariots fell with their horses, flags, drivers, and masters all shattered, and foot soldiers collapsed with severed arms, thighs, and shoulders. On the battlefield, hundreds of rivers of blood flowed from the limbs of the humans, elephants, and horses who had been cut to pieces. In these rivers, arms resembled snakes, human heads, turtles, dead elephants, islands, and dead horses, crocodiles. Hands and thighs appeared like fish, human hair like water weeds, bows like waves, and various weapons like clumps of bushes. The rivers of blood teemed with all of these. Chariot wheels looked like terrifying whirlpools, and precious gems and ornaments resembled stones and gravel in the rushing red rivers, which aroused fear in the timid and joy in the wise. With the blows of his plow weapon, the immeasurably powerful Lord Balaram destroyed Magadendra's military force. And though this force was as unfathomable and fearsome as an impassable ocean, for the two sons of Vasudev, the lords of the universe, the battle was hardly more than play. For him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the three worlds, and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, sages glorify his acts. Purport, the philosopher Aristotle once argued that the Supreme God would hardly take part in human activities, since all ordinary activities are unworthy of such a divine being. Similarly, Vishnu Chakravarti, who almost certainly never read the works of Aristotle, raises a similar point. Since Lord Krishna, Sri Krishna, creates, maintains, and annihilates the entire universe, isn't it an uninteresting mismatch when he fights against Jarasandha? The answer is as follows. The Lord plays the part of a human being and, expanding his pleasure potency, creates thrilling transcendental pastimes full of suspense and dynamic action. By the Lord's yogamaya potency appears exactly like a human being, and thus we may enjoy the spectacle of the Supreme Person acting on the earthly stage. Undoubtedly, stubborn agnostics will argue that since Krishna is God, there is no real suspense involved. Such skeptics simply do not understand Krishna's attractive potency. Beauty and drama, even on the material stage, possess their own fascinating logic, and similarly we love Krishna for its own sake. We appreciate his beauty for its own sake, and we enjoy Krishna's pastimes because they are in fact wonderful in and of themselves. In fact, Krishna executes his pastimes not for a mundane, egotistical purpose, but for our pleasure. Thus, the presentation of spiritual pastimes is itself an act of love that Krishna performs for the infinite spiritual happiness of pure-hearted souls who have transcended material envy of Godhead. In this regard, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti quotes an important verse from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Narakritir Kriti Parabrahman Karanat Manushaha. The Supreme Absolute Truth, for his own purpose, appears in a human-like form, although he is the source of everything. Similarly, in Srimad Bhagavatam we find Yan Mitra Paramanandam Purnam Brahma Sanatanam. The source of transcendental bliss, the eternal Supreme Brahman, has become their friend. Translation: Lord Krishna took arrows from his quiver, fixed them on the bowstring, pulled back, released endless torrents of sharp shafts which struck the enemy's chariots, elephants, horses, and infantrymen. The Lord shooting his arrows resembled a blazing circle of fire. So this is all a big description of Krishna and Balaram fighting against Jarasandha when Jarasandha attacks Dwarka. And this type of activity will take place on certain occasions when Krishna comes to the material world, or when avatars come to the material world. There are actual demons, and the Lord engages in fighting with them. In the spiritual world, there are no real demons, so that type of activity, this type of description, will never be there in the spiritual world. Of course, it is also mentioned that there are devotees who take the role of demons in the spiritual world temporarily, as well, and Krishna may fight with them, but it will not have the same extent of violence and ghastliness as these type of scenes in the spiritual world. So there's blood and rivers of blood and heads floating around, etc. That we'll find only in the material world. So the fighting of Krishna in extreme form takes place when Krishna appears in the material worlds and performs his pastimes. So the question is asked here that the Lord comes into the material world and does these activities, but in one sense it's not very proper that the Lord do this, because why should he associate with materialistic people, especially demons? It is all right if the Lord comes and displays his pastimes with his eternal devotees, but if he has to contact demons and touch them and fight them, etc., it's a little bit of a contamination, we can say, or a lessening of his position. Just as, of course, in the modern world, the heads of state, like the President of the United States, will not go to Iraq and fight in the war. You know? So, in this sense, why Krishna himself, he's the king, and he's fighting personally with all these demons and getting contaminated by them, or seeming to at least. So it is, even if he doesn't get contaminated, it's a little bit of a lessening of his position to participate in such activities with big demons, who are so unqualified to even contact the Lord. So this is this question will arise. But it says, as it says here, the Lord imitates human behavior. Now, of course, the word imitate is not maybe the proper word, because I mean it's very artificial that Krishna actually isn't doing it or something, you know. And we say that Krishna is like a human being, and he acts like a human being, and he has a human-like form. So the reason we say it is human-like or imitation is because we should understand that Krishna is never like us. He is not a jiva. He does not have a material body. When we talk about human beings, we understand that a human being has a material body that dies. So the Lord is not like that. But it does not mean that the Lord doesn't have this actual form of a human being and that it's not eternal. No, it is eternal. And it is non-different from the Lord. We should not think that the Lord just puts on his form of Krishna like clothes for the day and then takes it off again later on and he's actually something else. All these forms of the Lord are actually eternal. And they're inseparable from himself. It's not like us and our bodies. It's not like pairs of clothes. So when we say that Krishna has a human-like form, we should not think that that form of Krishna with two arms and small size is some temporary form that he assumes and afterwards that's finished with and he goes back to the spiritual world and has his four arms or whatever. So we should be careful when we talk about human-like form or imitating the pastimes of a human being. We should not think that it is in any way not part of the Lord or unspiritual or temporary. So all of these activities are actually spiritual and non-different from the Supreme Lord. So we cannot say that they're false because we say they're imitating human behavior. So this confusion arises particularly in Krishna. Now with the other avatar forms, many of them aren't even human, so we cannot call it human-like behavior, and we won't confuse them with human beings like Varaha or Kurma or Matsya because they don't have a human-like form. Of course, they have fish form or turtle form or whatever, so we may confuse them with turtles and fish or whatever. But in any case, even those forms, even they see them as a pig form, they will understand this is Supreme Lord. There's no mixing the Varaha form with the ordinary pig or the Matsya form with an ordinary fish because they're much huger, bigger, and the activities are much greater and they have full knowledge. So immediately, oh, this is God. It's not a fish of the material world. It's not a whale or anything like that. It's actually Supreme Lord. And everybody knows that. They don't confuse these with ordinary animals. Krishna is a little different. He has a very human-like form. Just the size of everybody else. He looks like everybody else. So there's more confusion because of the form. When you say he has Nara Akriti, or the form of a human, it is very, very similar to ours, very difficult to tell apart. And therefore, when the demons look at him, they're very confused. If someone says he's God, and they'll say, how can he be? Because he looks like everybody else. So the form is very similar to ours. And additionally, he has qualities which are more like human qualities. He does not show his greatness to the same extent as other forms of the Lord. Because he has a human form, he acts like a human. He doesn't act extraordinarily in all cases. So therefore, people can misunderstand and they'll think he is ordinary human being because he has a form of a human being and he acts like a human being, talks like a human being. So, for instance, Krishna went in Dwarka, and Narada Muni saw him, and he saw him act just like an ordinary husband acts with all of his different wives. And he was joking with his wives and being obedient to his wives and carrying out different activities with the wives and playing with the children. And he looked like just an ordinary king, almost. The only difference was that Narada Muni saw that. He had expanded himself into 16,108 forms and was doing this. So then Narada Muni understood, this is certainly not even a normal form of God. This is something I've never seen before. This is extraordinary. But for other people, they couldn't see that. So then they think, oh, he's only an ordinary human being. Additionally, because of his affection for his devotees, Krishna and their great prema, they cannot see his godly qualities, even if he displays them. They do not see them because of their affection for him as friend or lover or servant or whatever. They see him only as their some human being who is related to them as a friend or lover, etc., or son, etc. So they don't see him as God. So that of course is in Vrindavan. All the Brajabasis, they will think like that. So they see him as the most human of all. In Dwarka, there's a little bit of a difference because simultaneously they see him as God, because Vasudeva and Devaki saw him with four hands when he was a child, when he came out, and he had four arms, so they knew, this is Vishnu. And they also knew their son. So he has the form of a human being, they also know simultaneously he is God, and they also know he is my son, or he is our relative, and the Yadavas think of him as relative. So they have become a mixed attitude towards him. So he's simultaneously a human being, but also godlike. And their perspective will shift now and then, one way or the other. But in any case, he does have this human-like form, therefore he performs human-like activities more than other forms of God. So here we find him, Krishna, fighting with all these ferocious demons. That, of course, is common with the other forms of God. And we may ask, why should God at all do this? Why doesn't he just let his servants in this material world do this? He can do that. There are so many kings, etc. So normally that is what Krishna does. That's why Krishna doesn't come all the time. He doesn't come every year or every 100 years or every 500 years or every 1,000 years even. He may come every 400,000 years. In every yuga he comes. But other than that, he doesn't come so often. So he comes when there is a necessity and the big demons cannot be killed by others, even by the devotees. And then the Lord will come. So he comes on special occasions like that to at once help protect the devotees, restore dharma, and give pleasure to the devotees by showing them his great, great powers. So he's not actually human, and he's very, very powerful when he comes and destroys all these demons. And everyone can appreciate that, including the devatas. So when the Lord kills Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha, then the devatas are there appreciating, the Supreme Lord has killed demon. So they understand that and they appreciate that. So this is, even though it is below the Lord's dignity to come in the material world and fight with these unqualified persons, he does so at the response of his devotees and the devatas, and to give pleasure to his devotees. That's his motive. Protect the devotees, give them pleasure. And they request that he will respond to their request. So in spite of the fact that the Lord being so different from the material realm, he comes into the material realm out of his great mercy for his devotees. This is the real purpose. If it's only for asuras, he doesn't have to bother with it. Simply by his will he could do it. But he likes to give pleasure to his devotees. So when Krishna comes, of course, I said very special because he is more human-like, etc. And at the same time, he has more powers than everybody else. More than all the Vishnu forms and more than the all avatars. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. So that means his display of qualities and powers is much more than anyone's. And simultaneously, he's more human-like. So it's a little bit difficult then to combine such a human-like form with being Swayam Bhagavan. It would seem so. But Krishna is extraordinary and he's Supreme Lord, so he can make arrangements by which he can also display his extraordinary powers and show the world he is Swayam Bhagavan, and at the same time be human-like for his devotees. So this is the extraordinary nature of Krishna. He can do this. Krishna comes because the devatas pray for him, because he wants to associate with his devotees and perform pastimes with his devotees and very intimately. The devotees are longing to see him. So he comes, and simultaneously the demons are there, so he fights with all these different demons and kills them, and in this way protects the devotees. So this is a type of rasa called vira rasa, which is the rasa of chivalry and fighting and bravery. It's a secondary rasa, one of the 12 rasas, but it's secondary. So this type of rasa will exist in Krishna, a desire to fight, etc., will exist in Krishna as secondary to enhance the primary rasas, which are rasas of love. So we will see that the Krishna enacts the vira rasa in the spiritual world to some extent with his devotees, that is, his friends, so they fight with each other. Of course, not really, but because they're friends, sometimes they have contests and they fight each other. So they will display vira rasa then. It's not hatred, but it's out of fun they have their vira rasa. So that's about the extent of the vira rasa in the spiritual world. And of course, in front of the in conjugal rasa, Krishna will display vira rasa, and then the gopis become attracted to him because he is so strong and powerful like that. So, and there's mixtures of vira rasa there, but we won't find this extent in the spiritual world. So therefore, in order to display such extreme versions of vira rasa, the Lord may come to the material world and display like this. A similar instance is the fall of Jai and Vijay. So actually they didn't fall, because the Supreme Lord said, these are my two servants, they are my devotees, they are my parshadas, they are my followers. They are eternal servants. So they cannot fall from the spiritual world. So actually it is explained that it was an arrangement of the Lord. And why would the Lord do that? Why would he make his servants get cursed and fall in the material world? Because they'd like to stay with the Lord eternally. So only because his devotees desired this. So he responds to the desire of his devotees. And what was the desire of Jai and Vijay? They were thinking, the Lord wants to experience vira rasa, but he cannot do so unrestrictedly in the spiritual world. And even if he comes to the material world, these big demons are nothing compared to the Supreme Lord. So we should come to the material world and we should take the role of demons and we should fight with the Lord. We'll be much stronger than these demons who are real demons, because we're devotees actually. So we'll be more powerful than them. And then the Lord will have a real fight. And then he'll display his vira rasa. He'll get great pleasure from that. So out of their desire to please the Lord, they were desiring like this. So the Lord understood that desire, and in response to that, then he arranged for them to come into the material world by having them cursed by the Kumaras. And they got angry. They actually got angry at the Kumaras for trying to get into Vaikuntha. And even that anger was unbefitting for great devotees not to become angry. So it's all an arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And then, of course, then the Kumaras, they cursed them. And why they should curse them? Because they were fixed in Brahman, so they should not get angry. Yet they got angry suddenly. And then they cursed them. And then the Lord accepted the curse, let the curse pass. And why? Because the Lord had His own arrangement. He had arranged the whole thing. So in this way, the Lord's Virarasa, He had an opportunity in three different pastimes to display His Virarasa with these great demons and fight with them. So in this way, the Lord has this Virarasa, or desire to fight and display His courageous qualities. So He comes into the material world for that purpose. So in this particular case with Jai and Vijay, it was very special, because Jai and Vijay don't fall out of the spiritual world in every yuga or whatever. It's very, very special. So when He fights as with Hiranyakasipu, or with Ravana, or with Sishupal, then it's very, very intense conflict that takes place. So in all these forms, we have the Supreme Lord in Virarasa. So that is why, another reason why the Lord comes into the material world, fights with demons. In the form of Krishna, of course, that is a little special. He has another purpose, not only to have His Virarasa and to display Himself to the devotees, but He also illustrates another point by this particular pastime, and that is that He shows how He is superior even to Ramchandra and Narasimha. Because only after Krishna kills Jai and Vijay as Shishupal and Dandavakra, only after that, then they end up in the spiritual world. And that shows the special powers of Krishna. So when Narasimha kills, no, they come back for another birth. When Rama kills, come back again. But when Krishna kills, then finished. They end up in the spiritual world. So it shows Krishna's great mercy, and at the same time, Krishna's greater powers. So what is the source of Krishna's great powers? Ultimately, yes, Krishna has manifests greater powers to liberate them and elevate them and purify them. But Krishna Chakravarti says, actually the source of purification of these great demons in Krishna is because He has more attractiveness, more sweetness displayed. So when the demons meditate on or see Him, they cannot help but meditate on Him, even if it is in hatred. Because He's so attractive, His form is so attractive, they cannot stop thinking about Him. So Shishupal becomes absorbed in Krishna because of His beautiful form and His wonderful qualities. He hates Him, but he keeps thinking of Him all the time. So because of that constant thought, all of His karmas get dissipated. He gets purified very, very much by that. Whereas when with Rama and Narasimha, Ravana and Hiranyakasipu did not constantly think of Him. No, when they're fighting, yes, they thought, oh, this great person is there. He must be have great punya and great power, but I will fight him and I will kill him. But they did not constantly think of Him. So Shishupal, because of Lord Krishna's very attractive qualities, he constantly thought of Him, that purified him. Then he recognized, finally he recognized Krishna as Supreme Lord. And then Krishna cut off His head with this Sudarshan Chakra, and he got prema and went to the spiritual world. So Krishna shows more attractiveness in His form and His qualities and activities, and therefore even the great demons become attracted to Him, and they get much more than with the other forms. So therefore, that's another reason for Krishna coming into this material world and fighting like this, and He displays His supreme form as Swayam Bhagavan. Of all the different forms of God, Krishna, Rama, and Narasimha are considered more powerful, more display of qualities than the others. But of all those, Krishna displays the most. So then that's another reason for Krishna coming. And yet, Krishna is complete and has all these powers and qualities, but he has human form. So it is that human form which is most powerful in one sense, because it is the sweetest, it is the most attractive. And Shishupal could meditate on that form, and he couldn't help but think of that form. It was so attractive. So that human form is the most attractive form of all. Though there are many, many features in all the different forms, that the human-like form is the most attractive of all. So in this way, Krishna is the most human-like, but he has the most powers, and he displays these powers in various ways and in various pastimes. So he is God, and he's far away and completely different from the material realm. But at the same time, the Lord likes to come into this material world to show off his qualities for his devotees. And therefore he does things like this. So he fights with the demons because he likes to protect the devotees, but he also has this rasa he will display, and through this he also displays his great attractiveness and his great powers. So this is the special way in which Krishna does this. So Krishna comes and acts very much like a human being in these pastimes. At the same time, we should not think that it is imitation only. If the Lord does this, he actually becomes absorbed in this, and he relishes all of these activities. So we don't relish something which is actually false. If it's only pretend, we won't relish it. So the Lord actually enjoys all of these activities of fighting. He's not thinking, yeah, I'm the Supreme Lord, so anyway, I'm fighting with these people, but I'm going to kill them anyway, so it doesn't matter. So there'd be no thrill. But the Lord participates. We may think, well, he's all knowledgeable, so how can he do that? How can he become absorbed in all this? So this, again, is the extraordinary nature of the Lord. He becomes completely absorbed in all of his pastimes with his devotees. So when he's with Mother Yasoda, he's a small child, and he's not pretending to be a small child. He is a small child. He identifies completely. And Mother Yasoda takes him only as her son, not as God. And he takes himself only as a small person, not as God. And in this way, Mother Yasoda gets great pleasure in Krishna. He gets great pleasure in experiencing the love of Mother Yasoda. So Krishna's never pretending in these emotions or whatever he does. He actually identifies it with completely. Yet he's still Swayam Bhagavan, and he's Sarvagya, omniscient, etc. But somehow he adjusts in this way, and he identifies completely with these different roles. So there's no contradiction for this in the Supreme Lord. We'll say, the Lord's in Maya. If he overcome with love for Mother Yasoda and gets tied up because of Mother Yasoda's love, then we can say, well, Krishna's in Maya because he's Supreme Lord. He should be detached and should not show such subservience and whatever. No. This is the nature of the Supreme Lord. He loves his devotees very much and is overcome by that love, in spite of the fact that he is all-knowing and all-powerful. He is also controlled by bhakti. So that's a good quality in the Supreme Lord. So though he does this, he is overcome by his devotees. He is not overcome by any influence of the demons at all. That cannot sway him at all. But he is overcome and bewildered by his devotees. So that is not the same as material maya. Yes, Krishna becomes bewildered in prema. So that is a good quality because of his great attraction for his devotees. So what may ordinarily seem like a fault is not a fault in the Supreme Lord. It is actually his most wonderful quality. So the Lord's affection for his devotee is the supreme quality of the Supreme Lord. That though he is so powerful, he becomes controlled by his devotees. This is the most wonderful quality of God. So Supreme Lord adjusts everything, and he is the most powerful, but he is also participating with his devotees in all these different activities. So the devotee can understand this and appreciate this, and the non-devotee cannot. So the asuras, they will simply criticize. Yeah? Why, if he is the Supreme Lord, why is he involved in all this blood and fighting and contaminating activity in the material world? Yeah? Blood is contaminating. Yeah? You have to take a bath if you touch blood. And here they are all fighting, and Krishna's got blood all over him also. Why? How is this possible? So if we don't have that faith in the Supreme Lord, then we will criticize the Lord and find all sorts of faults with Him. So this is actually only the devotee can understand. And this is particularly true of Krishna. He's most bewildering for everybody. And what to speak of the demons, even Brahma becomes bewildered by Krishna. So very, very unique form. Krishna is. So the real devotees of Krishna, they will accept all of this. So the Bhagavatam actually is for the real devotees. And for the other people, they cannot understand so many things. So the Bhagavatam is presented in such a way that sometimes, because it's only for the devotees, the message is hidden and only the devotees can understand it. Not other people could not understand what is happening. So that is why some things are not explicitly stated in the Bhagavatam, because it's for devotees. Demons will not understand. Even people who are devotees but not devotees of Krishna will not understand properly. So therefore, things are not stated directly. They're stated indirectly. But the devotees, they will appreciate and they will understand and read between the lines and find out the actual truth. So that is why everything is not explicitly stated in Bhagavatam also, even though we say it's a complete work. Some things are only for the devotees, therefore it's confidential and it is kept secret. Sukadeva does not mention directly. So many cases like that. So the devotees, however, can understand. So in this way, the Bhagavatam, we really have to study it sometime and find out the real conclusion. For instance, there's a story of the, it mentions even in Bhagavatam that Garbhadaksha Vishnu had his white hair and his black hair, and they became Krishna and Balaram. That's what it sounds like. And then the same things there in the Mahabharata, same thing. So then we'll think that Krishna and Balaram are simply the expansions of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And Vishnu is Supreme Lord, and Krishna and Balaram are only avatar expansions. And that's what many people think in India. And they'll even quote Bhagavatam. Yes, see, Bhagavatam says so also. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, he takes his black and white hair and they become Krishna Balaram. So they're just minor expansions like his hair. So it looks very contradictory because right in the first canto, Sukadeva Goswami says, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is Supreme Lord. So how can it be that he's also the hair and expansion? So we've got contradictory elements. And the whole purpose of Bhagavatam is to present Krishna, not Vishnu. Krishna is the final form. So how is it possible? So the devotees will see the contradiction. Those who are not devotees to Krishna won't see the contradiction. They will say, see, this shows Krishna is not the Supreme Lord. He's only expansion. So therefore, the devotees have to be a little more introspective and understand what this means. So our acharyas have explained that verse. It doesn't really mean that. There's another meaning to the verse also. And therefore, it actually means that Garbhadaksha Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. It means the opposite. So sometimes the language is such that you can give several meanings to the language and the words, etc. Analyze the words and give different meanings. So it doesn't mean black and white hair at all. Actually, it means that Vishnu has his Sita Krishna hair. So it means black hair, which is bound up very nicely. Sita does not mean they're white, white and black. It just means it was bound up very nicely. Ultimately, when we analyze the verse, we can understand that Vishnu is only the expansion of Krishna and Balaram. And that he enters into them when they appear in this material world. In other words, when Krishna comes, all the other forms of God appear with him, inside him. to participate in his pastimes. And of course, this happens with many forms. For instance, when Lakshman comes, then Shesha also merges into him and participates in the pastimes with Ramachandra, like this. So in the same way, when Krishna comes, all the avatar forms enter him also. So whatever is in all the avatars, also in Krishna, plus more. So therefore, Garbhadaksha Vishnu also enters into Krishna when he performs his pastimes. So that's the actual meaning. But superficially, it may mean the opposite, that Krishna and Balarama are an expansion of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. But no, it's contradictory. So things are not stated directly sometimes like that. But the devotee should see the conclusion, and then they have to find the other meaning to the verses. So that is why the acharyas have given commentary like that, to show the real meaning. So in this way, Krishna is... we have to understand that Krishna acts in such a way that it becomes confusing, especially for the demons and even for the devotees. But those who are great devotees, they simply relish everything about the Supreme Lord. Okay, any question? Oh, okay, yeah. The Kumaras are Shaktivesh avatar, and it's described how they appear from Lord Brahma in the material world. But they're also special. They're jivas, but they have special powers given by the Lord, and they're empowered with jnana to distribute knowledge. And then when they, of course, they meet, they end up with Shantarasa when they go, they go out to the spiritual world and they can't get in. So they're highly qualified, and the Lord allows them up there for his pastimes. And this Vishnu Chakra mentions, even the demons, how can the demons, like, or not the devotees at least, Durvasa, how does he get up to see Narayan in the spiritual world? So it's explained that sometimes the Lord allows for this to show the inhabitants of the spiritual world other people. Sometimes he allows these people up very temporarily so Durvasa Muni can get in or whatever. Yeah, so he allows people up sometimes. Temporarily, but then they have to go back. So anyway, the Sanat Kumar and the Kumaras, they are special, so they're not barred in any way. They're also devotees of the Lord. And as well, they do have their forms in the spiritual world. So even the Shaktivesh avatars are in the spiritual world, Narada Muni and Sanat Kumar and the others. They also have forms in the spiritual world as well as in the material world. So they're not really disqualified from the going up to Vaikuntha and knocking on the door. So when they got there and then they were obstructed by Jaya and Vijaya, they became very angry. Who are these guards to tell us we can't get in? But even that anger was not proper, because they were supposed to be Gyanis. So how did they get the anger in the first place? Arrangement of the Lord.
But if a person is in a way of ignorance and can't understand, then they're not getting real knowledge.
Yeah.
So is reading alone, enough to purify?
If we hear the Bhagavatam and we're in ignorance, if we don't have any offensive mentality, then that has some effect. Just as if you chant the holy name in ignorance but you don't have any aparad, then it has effect on you, even if you chant accidentally. Or just as the Muslim says, haram, oh, so unfortunate, the pig is killing me and I'm contaminated when I'm dying. Haram, he says the name Rama. He gets benefit from that. So if we accidentally chant the name of the Lord, then we get benefit. So any accidental devotional service of hearing or chanting or remembering the form, qualities, activities, prasadam, anything, is very beneficial for a jiva if he's not offensive in his mentality. So if we're in ignorance, can we hear the Bhagavatam? Yeah, it has some effect, even though we're in ignorance and we can't really understand what it is. At least we'll hear the name Krishna. So that's good for us. But the other point is that it's mentioned in the first canto of Bhagavatam that Suta Goswami, when the sages ask the questions about what are we going to do now that, Kali Yuga has come and there's no Dharma, etc., and Krishna's departed with Dharma to the spiritual world. So what happens? So then His answer is that one should recite the pastimes of the Supreme Lord for the deliverance of the people of Kali Yuga. And particularly the Bhagavatam is the form of, it's like non-different from Krishna. So this will give people the proper knowledge and dharma so that they can survive in Kali Yuga. So everyone in Kali Yuga is in ignorance, but Bhagavatam is recommended. So even if we're in ignorance and we hear Bhagavatam, it has some effect for us. One, because of course the name of Krishna is there. Second, the pastimes of Krishna are such that they're attractive even to a person who's in the material world. They get interested in the story and they'll listen to the story anyway. Just like in India, when Mahabharata and Ramayana came on television, everybody was looking every week. Even the Muslims were looking. They all became absorbed in the pastimes of Rama and Krishna because the absorbing story was there, even though they didn't understand the philosophy or what was presented or don't know who Krishna is. Still, everybody's absorbed in it. So that's beneficial for them. Mm-hmm. They hear the name of Rama and they appreciate the pastimes a little bit, exciting pastimes. So even though they don't think of him as God, still, it's their Yata Sukriti. Now, if they have knowledge, of course, it's better. If they have little faith, it's better. Then it becomes actual bhakti in that case, and then they get quicker advancement because of that.
I heard that the bhakti vedantas that are administered in the lecture before the class?
No, not at least Vishwanath doesn't say that in his commentary. I don't know. So where did you hear that? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I didn't see that in Vishnu's commentary. I don't know. Maybe it's somewhere else. Not in the story, in the first canto anyway, because I translated the commentary. It wasn't there. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing, of course, is Narada Muni's also Ashakti Vaishavatar, but somehow he's acting like a devotee there and he goes through the whole sadhana bhakti stage in Vaidhi bhakti and then gets prema at the end of his life, kind of thing. But he's actually also Shakti Vaishnava avatar.
All the demigods have their eternal form in spiritual realm?
Well, not necessarily those devatas. There are devatas in the spiritual world, like Brahma and Shiva and others that perform those roles in the pastimes, and around Vaikuntha, then they have the different Dikpalas, situated there, the different directions, Shiva and Brahma and others, Indra, different directions. So they're also there and they participate in pastimes. But those are actually devotees, pure devotees of the Lord, carrying out their service there. There's that type of devotee there. So we have devotees here, but of course there are some jivas who may be aspiring to go upwards, and they've got that position due to their sukritis in their bhakti or whatever. And so they're like sadhakas, or like sadhakas. So we have those David is here also. Well, yeah, Lord Chaitanya actually is non-different from Krishna. So even though we say Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, that should also include Lord Chaitanya. So whatever attractive nature is there in Krishna will also be there in Lord Chaitanya. So he has very similar superiority to everyone else. In other words, more extra qualities are there in Lord Chaitanya as well as in Krishna. So he's also got that attractive nature. And the special feature of Lord Chaitanya, which is different from Krishna, is he's even more merciful. Krishna's most merciful, but Lord Chaitanya is even more merciful. And that is why, therefore, we have pastimes like delivering Jagai and Madai and giving them prema even now, without having to go to the spiritual world or anything. And he doesn't kill them either. He doesn't even kill them, and they get it. So when Krishna threw his suitors in chakra at Shishupala, he had become purified of all of his karmas, and then he recognized the Supreme Lord. And then when the chakra hit him, then he got prema. But then he went to the spiritual world. He died simultaneously and went to the spiritual world. But in the case of Lord Chaitanya, he didn't even have to die, and he got his prema. So not only Jagat Maya, but others also. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya is considered even more merciful because he delivers persons in the material world themselves without killing them or anything. And they get prema, even if they are aparadis, like Jagai and Madai. How can devotees extend? By the Yogamaya potency of the Lord, the devotees can expand themselves. Nanda and Yasoda have expansions also that became Drona and Dara. And then they did sadhana, and then they became Nanda and Yasoda. But actually, their eternal Nanda and Yasoda are not sadhakas at all. So those are expansions, amsos. And then finally they merge into the root, sarup, Nanda and Yasoda, when Krishna appears in Nanda and Yasoda, and then they merge back into them at that time. So that's so many, many persons. Even the devatas have their amsas, which joined into the yadavas when they appeared and participated in the pastimes, and then they went back to their posts again and joined into the devatas again when the yadavas disappeared and killed each other off, and they disappeared again. Yeah, and they merged into the bodies of the yadavas.
And they still say
So devotees also have expansion forms. Not specifically mentioned, but I would think so, because the other devatas like Shiva and Brahma and Indra are also there, so there's no problem for him being there also as servants of the Lord, and they glorify Vishnu and Vaikuntha, so they're all there. What is that? That Dhruva's son was mad?
Not mad, but he was pretending to be mad. And so his first son, I think, was pretending to be mad, and his second son.
What's his name? Who's that?
That was both.
Dhruva's son was mad? I don't know the son.
No, he was pretending to be mad because he was liberated.
Prabhupada
mentioned that he was on the front of the Paramatma realization.
Okay. Yeah. Well, sometimes we'll see this is the case of even Rishabhadev. He renounced his kingdom, went off to the forest, and then he acted like a stone, and he just sat there like, as if he was mad. And food comes, he'll eat. If it doesn't, he doesn't eat. And then there's the sage that Prahlad met was like a python. He was just lying on the ground like a snake. And if food came, he would eat it. And if nothing came, he didn't eat. Just lying there, So that's some sort of sadhana is like that, that the exalted devotees, they're, very avadutas. They're beyond the varnashram system, and they just, they don't talk, and they don't associate with people in society. And if food is there, they eat, and if it's not there, they don't eat, and they're just sitting there in the material elements and the rain and the cold and whatever. That's some sort of sadhana, very austere, and to control the senses, and they do all this sort of thing. So they may appear mad or whatever to get away from society so people don't bother them.
He said at that point that he was at that stage of birth, so if he was at that stage of paramount.
Oh, well, that's only one stage, like Atmarama also. Like Sukadev Goswami was Atmarama when he was born. So he's indifferent to the material world. But, of course, there are higher stages. We have to realize the Supreme Lord and develop bhakti. So Sukadev Goswami, by mercy of Krishna and Vasudev, then he got attraction for the Lord, so he advanced further. So that was his purpose of coming. If they're actually liberated, they don't have to come back, but maybe this is, they're at the final stage, you know, and they're kind of almost there, the perfect stage of being Atmaram. But if they actually do have realization, then that means they're there for another purpose, to get some higher, you know, higher realization, because Paramatma or Brahman realization is not complete, so they can get Bhagavan realization.
So they may be liberated, qualified for liberation, but they decide to come back.
Yeah, for further, or by the will of the Lord or whatever. He wants to give them mercy, so he'll keep them here for a little longer. Okay. Hare Krishna.